John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It is that time, Bill Rock. Yes, indeed. The two of us are here in studio four. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, John. Are you going to do parades this weekend?
No, but I know that one of your favorite things is parading.
Well, parades are fun when they like you. I remember at the beginning it wasn't so much fun, but no, actually, Ed Koch once told me, I called him when I was thinking about running, and I said, what's the best thing about being mayor? He said, parades, he loved them. And the first parade I did,
No heavy lifting, you didn't have to...
the Israeli Independence Day parade or something or other, and it was fun, and I called him, and I said, you were right, and then the next parade, they booed me because after I got elected because of smoking ban or something or other. But it's when friends of mine come from out of town, I always try to drag them along if they're willing, if they happen to be here on a weekend. And it's a very American thing, but it's fun. People like going out and having a good time. For the kids, it's fun. It's bands. It's cotton candy.
Well, you got the whole thing. You got Fleet Week here. You got the big boats in the river.
Well, that, you know, that which should remind us, Memorial Day is a solemn day. Mm-hmm. I mean, most people take a three-day weekend, and I will be out there parading and smiling and laughing. But, you know, the whole idea of Memorial Day is to remember those who gave their lives so that we can express ourselves, so that we can parade. And not all parades are fun and bands and everything. Some parades are serious parades where the public is protesting their government. And we have a right to do that because people have fought and died to give us that right and to maintain it. In other places of the world, they don't.
I will tell you that I have not been in a Memorial Day parade for some time, but I used to, like so many, when I was a Cub Scout, a Boy Scout, we used to parade in the Memorial Day parade. And then we used to gather up on a school field, the entire parade and watchers, and somebody would actually give a speech, a talk about exactly what you just said, those that have come before us. And I can remember as a little child how impressed and how important it was.
I remember as Cub Scout, Boy Scout, the local cemetery had a big old cemetery, still used, but there were a couple places where there were a military plot with all of the stones being exactly the same, perfectly in line. And we would go and place a flower on each as a school project or a Boy Scout project, don't remember. And you'd stand there, and there would be speeches. And my mother says the first thing she remembers, maybe the only thing, about World War One.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Well, she was born in 09, so, you know, she was 10 years old when the war ended. She said she lived in Jersey City, and she said she was allowed to go further away from home than ever before she was the oldest of three girls, to buy flags for Armistice Day. Everybody had to have their own flag. It was a very patriotic time, and it was the war to end all wars, and, you know, enormous carnage, although more so for Europeans than Americans. Americans came into that war a little bit later, and we didn't suffer as much as some of the terrible suffering here, but not as much as in Europe. I mean, the Battle of the Somme, they lost 1 million people in one battle. Our great disaster was the Civil War, where we lost that kind of numbers.
Absolutely so. They're staggering, the numbers of people that fell.
The president of Harvard University, Drew Faust, just wrote a book about death in the Civil War. And I didn't read the whole thing, but I read a good chunk of it. And it was fascinating. I mean, the number of people that died and how people dealt with it.
Generations were stripped of the male.
Absolutely.
Male of the species.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that was traditionally the ways that the great calamities. And then, of course, right after World War One, remember, came the flu of 1918
I was just talking about just before
this
we came.
This flu has nothing to do with that. Let's hope it doesn't come back that way in the fall.
What was fascinating, though, was the story I was reading about how people born before 1957 are less likely to get this flu, and that the doctors are very interested in that.
There is a theory that they have an immunity because of a similar kind of flu. Well, I think
to the 1918 Spanish flu.
Well, no. Okay. I mean,
it was a couple of steps away.
Don't know. But, you know, all of these things are theories, and their medicine doesn't work that way. We're oh, you know for sure. But there is a theory that there was a strain of flu, whether it had anything to do with 1918 or not, it's not important, but that in the 50s, and people my age, for example, built up some immunities. That's one theory. If you talk to Tom Frieden, I've asked him, he said that there's not a lot of evidence that immunities last that long. So it's a nice idea. Mm-hmm. It would fit perfectly with the results you want, but it's sort of going back and creating data to give you the results
that you have.
Yeah. I mean, it just, who knows? Maybe it's right, maybe
all right,
it's
give me the latest on the swine flu.
Two terrible tragedies. One, it appears that the 16-month-old did not have flu. That was not the cause of it. Although the reason I'm a little bit hesitant is the test that we give in our Department of Health and Mental Hygiene says no, but in theory it could be. We don't know how the test works on somebody that's deceased as well as somebody that's alive, because you just don't have very much data.
Sure.
And so they've sent off samples to the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta to test. So you can't say for sure, but it would appear no. And the assistant principal, another tragedy. I mean, you know, no matter what the reason is, these two people are dead, and it's, you know, your prayers got to go out to the family. There may have been some pre-existing conditions, but with the exception of that, it's been a very mild flu.
The school situation, is it flux
everybody,
all the time?
Everybody says let's not panic, and then everybody writes headline stories is what's happening. But that's good evidence. What would you do if it really was something that was life-threatening? How would you reassure the public? And so I think one of the things I want to do when this is all done is go back a month or two from now when it's over and see what kind of information we could have given out, whether that would have reassured people or just heightened anxieties. You know,
the hardest part of this is, as I watch you and Tom Frieden and others deal with it in around the world as well, is that there's nothing you can do to prevent it other than take people away from one another so that it isn't spread.
If you think about it, it's exactly the reverse of a hurricane. A hurricane comes in, you have notice. Hurricanes, you can see, you can predict 12 out of the next 10 hurricanes that hit. There are a couple that won't get here, but they're not going to arrive unless you saw them coming, for sure. And we practice, and we have all sorts of literature called 311. You can get a hurricane update thing. And, you know, the fire department's going to evacuate seniors' homes, and the police department's going to search houses, and the schools are going to be where people go, and we have water and cots and blankets, and we've worked on the roads. They had to evacuate a big chunk of Long Island, which have come through New York City. It'd be a very big problem, but we've worked on all of these problems. That's a relatively easy thing. This is the reverse. This is the reverse where you don't want people to leave. You don't want them to leave their house. Or supposing you didn't want them to leave one borough or one part. How do you keep people in? It is a much more difficult problem from a public health and a control point of view. And there is no right answer.
Right, so you're at the pay grade, and you're the man that's got to make the decision.
We're working on it, right. But you know, people want specificity in something where there is none. Nobody's sure what happens in these things. Nobody's sure whether you've got it or don't get it. Whether you this caused that, you know, you cough. Does that come from this? You have the flu. Okay, flu's a normal thing. Is this flu different? So far, what you know about this flu is it's different. Doesn't mean that's good or bad. It is later in the season. Doesn't mean it's good or bad. There have been other times when flu was late season. This one is. It's unusual, but not unprecedented. It does not seem to be so far serious. Doesn't mean it can't come back in the fall seriously. So if you want to say, well, you know, don't relax, there's plenty of reasons to think that. On the other hand, the fact of the matter is today, most people that get it have mild symptoms. There's a theory that a lot of people get it and don't even know they get it. The symptoms are so mild, although, don't know, later on we can go back and test people who said I was never sick and see whether they have the antibodies in them, which would be
I think it's been interesting and a positive interesting that there have been those that criticize, obviously. You can put the names next to the face if you want to. But it hasn't been politicized, because it could be used at a much higher level.
I suppose maybe that's a little sign of maturity in society.
But would you agree with that assessment, that it hasn't really been abused?
The mayor and the governor and everybody's out there doing their speeches because you've got to be seen. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's right. It does reassure some people. On the other hand, sometimes you have a press conference every day. It may worry them more. I think people are a lot less. Those that you read about, the yelling and screaming, those are a very small percentage of people. Most people just go about their business, and if they get a little bit sick, they hopefully stay home, don't contaminate other people, and they get over it. But, you know, there's never an easy answer. For example, somebody says, close the schools. Well, number one, there's an awful lot of parents who can't afford to stay home to take care of the kids, and there's nobody else. Their kids need the education, and if it's a minor cold, there's the disadvantage, but another few weeks of education, pick the few weeks for the long term for that child's life, that's much more important. There is the whole issue that if you close the schools, there's no evidence that it's going to make any difference whatsoever. The experts say close them for a month, keep every... The trouble is the kids are still going to go. There's a big article I saw in the paper.
The malls.
Yeah. One kid says, my parents don't know I'm here. Well, okay, hopefully parents read the paper.
Don't read the paper.
I wait until that kid comes home wakes up the next morning. Oops.
Yeah, Aunt Millie just sent me this picture of you. What?
Right, yeah. So, but it's... And also, you know, there are a lot of parents who want to send their kids to school. You can withhold your child. You can keep your kid at home. I'm not sure that's good because your child does need the education, but you have the right to do that. But the parents who want to send their children to school, we have an obligation to make the schools available for them, unless it really is threatening. And what is threatening? It's once again a subjective thing, and you can always criticize. You can be 110% secure and still have the same problem and have a cost in terms of lack of education or money or whatever that's intolerable. Or you can do something that's middle-of-the-road common sense, and that's what most people
do. When we come back, Mr. Mayor, we'll talk about the terror plot that was foiled the other day up at Riverdale. We will get to that in just a moment.
Mike and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
We are back, and again, let me remind you, if you'd like to get involved here, telephone number 3210710, 800-321-0710. Mayor Michael Bloomberg on a Friday here. All right. The terror plot, potentially scary stuff.
Yes, but amateurs.
Totally.
I mean, that doesn't mean they couldn't have killed a lot of people, but they were not part of a professional worldwide terrorist ring. These guys were, what it appears, is in jail. I don't know. I don't want to prejudice. I don't want to say anything to be quoted in court. But came out of jail together and formed this band. And I'm going to give some awards later, the FBI and the Joint Terrorist Task Force, which is the FBI and the PD and some other organizations. And they knew about it, and they've been working. You know, this has been a long time following them because you want to see if they actually want to do it and get evidence to arrest them and not enough evidence so you get a conviction, not just a...
Well, that was one of the things we were talking about this morning, that there's been some speculation that, maybe the informant had something to do with it. I don't want to go there. But I maintained that the authorities, both the city of New York and the FBI, must have had some pretty tight evidence that these guys ginned this thing up. It was all their
idea. I mean, they've been, I gather that, I want to be careful how I say this, they've been followed and observed for a decent amount of time, and this was not a group that was going any place without us being ready to pounce at any time. So, you know, was anybody really at danger? No, I don't think. I think you can say that there was never a point at which people's lives were at danger. On the other hand, if we hadn't found out about it at the beginning and hadn't followed with them, then the people's lives would have been in danger. So the good news is that the way I phrased it yesterday is people always talk about our first responders. I refer to them as our first preventers. That's their job. so that you never have to put into operation all the plans that you do to recover from a disaster. The real objective here is to prevent a disaster. Fire department going around. That you know, these people put their lives on the line, rush into burning buildings to save us. But the part of their job that you hope is in many senses most important is the inspections they do and the advice they give and the lessons they teach us about how to prevent fires.
And the codes that they write.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be wonderful if they never got called out. I mean, it's the Maytag repairman.
I think, too, though, that this is just a reminder, whether the perpetrators are inept or not, it's just a reminder that there are those people out there that want to do these sort of things. I mean, they're thinking about it.
Anybody that thinks we don't live in a dangerous world with people who want to take away our freedoms is just so totally naive. It is scary. And everybody says, yes, I understand. I don't want to take sides in the Obama-Cheney
fascinating debate, though, yesterday.
Yeah, but nevertheless, we do live in a dangerous world. And I think, you know, the president is right that there is a balance, and I don't think Dick Cheney said anything to the contrary. Their ways they come at it may be different, and maybe they even what the balance is different. But, you know, the president, once he gets into office, you can see him doing things that are different than what he said before because he's actually looked at it now, which is, you know, some people can say flip-flop. I think it's a sign of intelligence if you get there and you realize that there's a better way or that you didn't have all the facts and you say, look, I mean, I'm not married to what I said before. If there's a better ways or different facts, change. You wouldn't want anybody in office who wasn't willing to take new information. But the president does certainly have different views than Dick Cheney. And once again, it's another one of these things. There's no right answer. How do you know whether or not any particular policy of the government kept us being attacked if we weren't attacked? It may have been nobody wanted to. It may have been that, you know, their car broke down and they never got to the point to do something to kill somebody. So there's just no easy answer.
All right.
But it's a dangerous world still.
It is a dangerous
world. Having said that, I think you should feel better about living in New York than ever before. It just goes to show that all of our preparations, all the things that, you know, Police Commissioner Kelly and the 50-odd thousand people that work for the PD and the FBI and all of the coordination, all of this stuff does work. And hopefully it'll work the next time. No guarantees, but I'd rather live here than any place else. And you can't go about your life worrying, looking over your shoulder. Let the professionals look behind you. You go about and enjoy America.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we went long on the first break, so this one, unfortunately, is a little short.
One, two, three, four.
Back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and as Bill Rock, our announcer, said, 800-321-0710. Get in line for your questioning of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Big summit with the governors and World Trade Center folks, PA?
You know, it's...
Did you get anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I have said this for the last 7 1/3 years. This is the most difficult... Number one, it's the most difficult construction project probably ever done because there's so many different levels. You've got everything in one very small area with a railroad running through it that you can't shut down and roads you need and a subway and all that sort of stuff. Number two, it's got the federal, state, and city governments, the public and private sector. There's agencies. There's
everybody and his brothers.
There's all the families who have a vested interest here, rightly so. So that's we've had three different governors in New York and three different governors in New Jersey in the last 7 1/3 years. And each time you get a new governor, they want to, rightly so, I think, get their guy in and see what's going on and see whether they agree with what was done before. There was a lawsuit between the insurance companies and the developer. This was, if I remember, Larry bought the two towers, or at least the two towers, had insurance, but the insurance contracts had not been signed. They had preliminary agreements in place, but, you know, because that's just the normal way insurance works, but nobody expected the buildings to come down during that period. So that's all, that's how you get here. And the last thing is that the world has changed. A couple years ago, there was unlimited demand for space and unlimited credit at low interest rates available. Today, there is very little credit available, and there's people are worried about taking space. I think there's still enormous demand there, but people are unwilling to sign leases at the moment.
How did you leave it? How did everybody leave it when they walked out the door?
What we agreed to do was that the staffs would come together between now and I think we picked Thursday, June 11th, as I remember, to try to come up with an agreement of all the parties. We would not negotiate through the press, which just puts people in very difficult positions, and they can't come together. And that everybody, the principals, meaning the two governors and the mayor and Larry Silverstein and the Port Authority, we would send people that we all agreed in front of each other spoke for us, so that you can't say, oh, well, I didn't know, I wasn't posted. The person that's there, is if you send your guy or your woman, it's their responsibility to keep you posted and to only say what they're authorized to say. But if they make a deal, you got to live up to it. It's a deal. Not the ways it always works. And, you know, everybody, I said, look, everybody has this interest. You can't leave this as a hole in the ground. And it's the design is such, and maybe it had to be this way, but if one thing doesn't work, almost everything stops. So, for example, you can't build the PATH terminal unless you have the three, at least the basements, the stubs, as they would call them, of towers 2, 3, and 4, because that's where electricity and water and air conditioning all comes from. It's stored under those locations. So, you know, you have to do some of all three buildings. Then the question is, what goes on top? Well, one person says, well, let's build retail, and then down the road, we can build a bigger tower, except that how do you build a bigger tower over an existing retail space? Very hard to do. It would be very expensive, so I suppose everything is, in theory, possible. There is a theory that, you know, everybody should have if they have upside potential, they should have some downside potential. The way it was originally structured, Larry Silverstein did not have to really have any money in the... So I think he understands that, this demand for that. The Port Authority is worried about this. Lots of demands. They're building another tunnel from New Jersey, what they call this ARC tunnel. And they have other transportation projects, and they have to do some things in New Jersey. After all, it is a joint New Jersey and New York organization. So, you know, everybody's got something. Shelley Silver's worried about it's his district and he and just all of Lower Manhattan. I think he's right. The mayor's concern is that this is the future. We have to, when the economy improves, and I don't know when it's going to do it. I happen to think it's happening right now, but even if I'm wrong, when it improves, we have to have the space so that companies that want to expand can take the space and not move someplace else. And if you start a building now, it's going to be ready in 5 years. If you wait 5 years, it's not going to be ready for 10 years from now. Well, 10 years from now, you're...
All right, a closer-in problem. Not that this one isn't in close. Obviously, it's very... But budget, New York State budget. Big problem. So the governor said we got $3 billion short. Now it's $6 billion short. Are you worried?
Yeah, I think that the worry is not so much for this year, it's next year or the year after. For New York City, I'm not worried about 2010, although we still haven't done everything. We need some help from labor and we need some help from Albany to get through 2010. And it is worrisome, but the magnitude of the problem for 2010 is much less than for 2011, because we're balancing 2010 with a lot of money we've rolled in from 2009 and 2008 and 2007, where we prepay interest. We've made a lot of cuts. But, you know, every time you make a cut, it's hard to get the next to make a cut on top of it, just because you're starting to get down
thinner,
to the level.
Right.
Yeah, thinner. And there's a certain level of services you have to provide if we're going to have a city. So, but I'm worried about Albany, and, you know, they're going to have to worry about that. My worry is about the city, and that's what I'm going to focus
on. All right. Connecticut today, 55,000 state workers off, furloughed, no pay. New Jersey today, the same situation. Would you consider doing that? In New York?
We don't have the ability. It's been litigated, I gather. I've asked about that. We don't have the ability to have a furlough. We just don't. The ways the state constitution's written, I guess, it's been litigated, and we don't.
So the state doesn't have the opportunity
either.
We
cannot. No, state does not either. You know, and you know, we talk about we want to make sure we don't cut back for education and for crime protection and that's policing and that sort of thing. We also got to worry about our hospitals, our nursing homes, and our home care providers. We've slashed, the state slashed aid for nursing homes and home care and city hospitals four times in the last 14 months. And, you know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars for providers that are struggling even in the best of financial times. And if the state budget is going to be reopened to deal with a mid-year shortfall, which is what the governor is really talking about, we've got to make sure that they can't cut health care anymore. You know, I've always believed you can do things better and then, you know, if you keep working at it. But there is a point where you got to make sure that people are taken care of and that their immediate health care needs are taken care of. And we have a problem when people get laid off and they don't have insurance, they come to our public hospitals. And we've got to make sure that, you know, we're a compassionate society. And so, yeah, I am worried about how much goes to home care and hospitals and nursing homes.
One of the things I know is incredibly important to you, and it has paid off, I think, really, really well here in New York City's mayoral control of the schools. It is a political debate, however, that the heat has been turned up on because the law actually expires the end of June. There seems to be a consensus from those that are saying mayoral control needs to be tweaked, needs to, you know, we'll give the mayor his control, but we want to tweak it. What sort of tweaking are you willing to think is appropriate?
Well, there you can always find ways to do things better, and we're looking at, you know, listen to anybody, any proposal, and see if it works. Fundamentally, control is control. And, you know, if somebody says, well, I'll, you know, give you control except for if it's jumping 95% of the ways across the Grand Canyon, you might as well not jump. Let's not kid ourselves. And what you don't want to do is to roll back all of the progress. And if you just take a look at the improvement in the school system, it is really quite mind-boggling. We are the poster child for this country in terms of improving a public school system. Closing the gap between black and Latino kids and white and Asian kids, you know, we want white and Asian kids to keep doing better and improving those schools, but we've had this intolerable gap for too long. We've actually wiped out a good third of it and going in the right direction. You want to make sure you can keep doing that. People say, oh, well, we want more parental involvement. I saw one of the newspapers wrote an editorial the other day. Parental involvement is great, but parents should be running the kids at home and the teachers should be in the administration running it, running the kids or whatever the word is. Not running isn't, but in the schools. And you do not want parents setting educational policy. You do not want parents telling teachers how to teach. Teachers would not be happy about that.
Or what to teach.
Or what to teach. That's what you have professionals for. And we have 80,000 great teachers. And not everyone, but the vast bulk of it. This is really a great group of teachers. And they care and they're proud. And I meet teachers on the subway every day. You know, I'm a teacher. I'm proud of it. Keep going. This is the greatest thing. We're really making a difference. And we have teachers from all over the country that want to come and work here. Enormous number. You know, it's you got to be careful. We have parent coordinators. For the first time, teachers can get information to the parents through parent coordinators, and parent coordinators can get information, and parents can get information to teachers through parent coordinators. And we have a whole bunch of things. We have a very good woman running it, all of the parent outreach thing. But there are some activists who said, oh, no, I want another city board. Or they want to empower these 32 school chancellors or superintendents. If you want to really hurt the school system, let's take some money out of the classrooms and build 32 more bureaucracies. That's what we spent the last 7 years
breaking
undoing.
Down, right.
Sure. You know, and somebody says, well, I can't move my kid to a better school. You know, I used to be able to call my elected official, and if I gave a contribution and told him I work on the campaign, that's what, you know, it is sad.
Governor Patterson signed a bill the other day that requires New York City schools to electronically notify parents and others electronically, you know, cell phones, et cetera. Did they provide
funds? Notify what?
Notify if there's a school emergency. My question is, there's nothing wrong with that. It seems
it's a nice idea, but most parents don't keep their cell phones on all the time or have them with them or check the websites or that sort of thing. I mean, it's a lot of these things. It's nothing wrong with it, incidentally.
No, exactly.
I think the governor's right on. There's nothing. No, we should try. We're trying in the city. We have this Notify NYC, so we're doing it ourselves. But, you know, if you go back and look, 9/11 is a good example. Parents, oh, I didn't know what was happening. That is true, because the cell service was all blocked. Everybody's trying. And that's what would happen anything.
Sure.
In a big emergency.
Sure.
None of this stuff works. But what did work is the public schools in 9/11 had the common sense to keep the kids there and to not put them out in the streets and let them run around. And the public schools did exactly what you would hope they would do in an emergency on 9/11 and have every reason
to
be proud
control.
Of it.
Keep Absolutely. Control of what's going on. Mr. Mayor, we'll open up the phones here. We've got 5 minutes of your questions for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We're going to start with line number 6 went away, so we'll move to number 1. That will be Edward. Ed, you've got the mayor. Go.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
I'm a member of the American Legion in the Bronx.
Right.
And I would like to thank you and your staff for yesterday's reception at Gracie Mansion for the veterans and the active duty military personnel.
Well, thank you. We do it every year. It's a nice way to say thank you. We have Fleet Week, so we had lots of brass, lots of stripes on arms. And
great-looking uniforms.
I gave a scarf to one of the female officer there, and all the male officers got cufflings. Those were the commanders of the each of the ships, and then the top brass got crystal apples, or if they were here last year, we gave them a little silver box, donated by Tiffany's, incidentally, so we're not spending public's money. And they all gave me, they have these coins they give for each of the ships. I walked home, I could barely walk, I had so many coins. Great weekend, a lot of fun, but remember, this is a serious purpose here, to remember those who gave their lives and to those that serve. Say
nice
thank
of
you.
Ed, though, to call and thank you.
Yep.
That was a nice thing. I've got John and Paramus on the line. John, what's your question for the mayor?
Yes, Mayor, you're doing a good job. You're closing Broadway Sunday from 47th to 34th Street.
Yep.
Could you give us some details? Will the cross streets be open?
Yeah, cross streets are open, and 6th and 7th Avenues will work. We think all the modeling says it'll work a lot better. The problem is that when Broadway comes across, if you think about it, going east and west, you can have not only a traffic light, let's say at 6th and at 7th, but one in the middle at Broadway. And sometimes that would be so close to 6th or 7th that, you know, it's 100 feet. And that screws up traffic and the merges, and we'd try to cross. And all the modeling says, and it's a test we'll find out after a decent period, that it'll be a lot easier to go east and west and north and south on the basic perpendicular grid that the city has. Broadway's the only street that really goes diagonally across. And the Broadway has already only down to 2 lanes above Times Square and below Herald Square. That's been done, and it's not never been a problem. And what it does also is it creates these enormous plazas for people, and there are more people that walk. People say, oh, you know, you're turning the city over to pedestrians. Well, there are more pedestrians than there are, but even they will be safer. Times Square and Herald Square have high accident rates because the streets are so crowded, the sidewalks are so crowded, they have to walk in the streets. But we'll see what happens. The stores seem very enthusiastic about it. People say, oh, they won't be able to drop off and pick up. Right now, the trucks park on the side and they bring things around on trolleys. Taxis will be better off because they'll be able to get there faster and pick up passengers. So we'll see what happens, but it's exciting.
Who's the only man that can move Broadway? Michael Bloomberg. Let's.
Jeanette Sedicon is the one that came up with this good idea. And if it works, it's her idea. If it doesn't work, in all fairness, I will take the grief, rightly so.
There
but she's
go.
Doing a great job.
Michelle in Nassau, your question for the mayor, please.
Yes, morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
New York City council members many months ago were asking our wonderful first responders to pay tolls while responding to emergencies to save $10 million while they get gas cards and leased cars and all that.
Well, I don't know that the city council gets gas cards or lease cards. Look, the bottom line is if the... If you're driving to work, no matter whether you work for the government or you work for home, everybody's got to pay their tolls. If you're coming in on official business, the difference here is instead of the MTA paying, it's the city will have to pay. We pick up the expenses for city workers that are legitimate business expenses. And incidentally, I don't think this was the city council. My recollection is it was the MTA that changed the rules. But, you know, first responders, everybody's got to pay when they go to work their own fares. That's reasonable. And when it's a business thing, businesses normally would pick up business expenses for their employees. The city picks up business expenses for their employees. So, you know, the cop that goes onto the subway to protect us doesn't pay anything to get on. If he has expenses, we pick up the tab.
It seems to be a reasonable thing to do. Unfortunately, I'm not sure we have enough time here. We have less than a minute. It will do no justice to take another question here. Enjoy your weekend and
you
too. Your parading.
Lots of parades, fun. Remember, and Fleet Week, lots of things to go see, Staten Island, Hudson River. But remember, you know, if you see a soldier, a sailor, a Marine, Coast Guard person, whatever, Air Force personnel on the street, just walk up and say, the way I keep telling you, do the same thing for our cops and firefighters, say thank you for protecting us. We are a lot better off because of you, and without you, we'd be in real trouble.
Absolutely so. Enjoy your week, Mr. Mayor. We will talk with you next Friday.